Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Crow's Nest. I'm Thomas III, and I'm here with Dr. Kevin Crow. How are you doing today, Dr. Kevin Crow?
Doing well, doing well.
Now, we've talked a lot about transparency and accountability, especially within our own parties and at the state level, even at the federal level. But it seems like the local level has been kind of more what we've been focusing on.
Yeah.
Because that's where we can probably make the most change, or where our listeners could probably make the most change at the local level first. So what happened this past week or so that where there was some transparency and accountability that was trying to be shown there, but kind of wasn't reciprocated on the other end.
Yeah, this is what, and I wish Kelly were here today because she could give this on both sides. You know, she was a former Democrat chair, and she's aware, you know, that this is a problem in both parties, is trying to make representatives, senators, basically the state legislators, accountable to the people who elect them, but also accountable to the parties who backed them. And north of here in Canadian County, this last week, the Canadian County Republicans, who are very active, it's a very active group up there, they wrote an open letter with certain points that they expect that their legislators, both their state senators, their state representatives, to basically hold to certain principles. An example, one of the things that they wanted to hold to was they want to eliminate tax credits. You know, to kind of, in other words, they don't like the idea of tax credits because that just goes to special interest, which again, tax money is supposed to be used for the general welfare, not just specific, you know, special interest.
That goes back to the corporate welfare
that's
that
exactly
we've talked
right.
about a
exactly.
lot.
Exactly. I mean, exactly. You can, when you fill out state taxes, you can see when you have those, when you look at some of those tax credits, very few of them apply to just working people. I mean, like you said, we get the ones for children, but other than that, you know, very few of them can you use. So they're more for special interest. Well, they actually were on the TV with this. Some of the TV reporters interviewed some of the chair there. Well, they had commitments from in Canadian County, at least, their elected representatives, their elected state senators, and who were supposed to be there. And when the meeting happened on Tuesday, none of them showed. None of the many of these had already committed. I mean, it said we'll be there, and what was amazing, and I'll have to give credit to the Canadian County Republicans. They are very partisan. Again, that's their business. They stick by their principles. Having said that, they do have fairly open meetings. They will invite opposition, sometimes people who don't agree with them, just to hear them out, to see what, you know, what's up. I remember one time they had they brought in the Oklahoma Policy Institute, which is considered a fairly liberal group, and they welcomed them, let them speak for an hour and a half, and it's very cordial. Well, this Tuesday night, when they invited all these representatives, these senators to be there, and again they didn't show. Nevertheless, there were a few teachers who showed up who were actually Democrats from Enid. They drove all the way from Enid, so that's what, an hour and a half drive.
Yeah,
just to be there. They wanted to hear this. They had a representative from the teachers union again to show up because they wanted to be part of this discussion. So those people came, but their own representatives and state senators didn't. But I think what it shows you is there is a movement, a real movement, to try to have accountability for elected officials. And I think this is building. This is just one example. But I think, you know, we talk about on this program, how do we make people accountable? And we say, take it into your hands, you know, write them, get them to come. And when they don't, you know, make it known that they didn't show and stuff. But I really do give my hats off to this group who has tried to have some accountability. And again, if people disagree with them, that's okay, because they were there to have a discussion. You know, that's the point. If they're wrong, show them where they're wrong, but at least show up.
So what should the backlash be for these representatives who, you know, commit to something like this and then turn around and don't show up? How do you kind of hold them accountable for that?
Well, you basically publicize they're not showing up. And if they're and they take a political consideration, thinking, well, if I show up, it'll look bad. But again, the people who were there, it wasn't just these Republicans who were there. They again had teachers who were there. Many of them that were registered Democrat. They had teacher union officials there. So this is a fairly broad group that they were supposed to speak to, and I think this is a problem. I mean, if they're not being accountable to the people who elected them, that's certainly a problem. I mean, you know, this has to, you know, these people have to be held accountable in a sense that, you know, when they don't show up, give us your reasons, especially when you said you would show up. So I think this is probably the right track. I just wanted to bring this up to show you that there are people who do try to hold people accountable and just keep fighting the fight. You know, you may not win the battle, but you keep doing this and putting pressure just so people will be there.
So is this one of those kind of battles that's going to be waged within the media?
I think so.
Social media?
That'll be part of it. Social media and the traditional media. The TV, at least TV channels, radio channels, they have covered this. I guess out of Tulsa, is that where Pat Campbell, I'm not good on the different radio personalities, but I think his show has been covering this. So again, that's what you do. You take it to the media, to all forms of the media.
So it seems like we're starting to see a little bit of that shift. Kind of,
I think so, and I would, and again, this would be a good thing for county Democrat groups to do the same thing, you know, to hold their Democratic representatives, you know, accountable, you know, have them to come, have them to explain their views, things of this nature. So this is one that doesn't matter whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or an independent, you know, just hold people accountable.
So were all the government officials that were invited, were they all Republican?
Yeah, these would all be Republicans who were there. But again, that's all that represents that county. I mean, all the representatives and the senators who represent that particular county are all Republican.
So could it have been that there were the fact that there were teachers there and there were some Democrats that might have scared some of these people off from coming?
Well, if Republican representatives and Republican senators won't go to a Republican meeting, that's problematic right there. And the fact is, again, I think it was great that they had an open meeting and invited people even who weren't Republicans there. But that should have been, you know, that was a friendly setting for them, and they still didn't show up.
Yeah, and I think that kind of just shows how a lot of our elected officials look at what they're doing. A lot of them really don't seem to be there to represent who they're supposed to be there to represent.
That's right.
They're really not worried about it as much as just being there to vote or cash the checks or, you know, whatever that they do, and not really listening to their constituents. So hopefully this is something that's really taking hold, and people are going to start doing this a lot more.
Yeah, and again, you know, in our listening audience, anybody who's active with any political organization, I don't care if they're Democrats, I don't care if they're Republicans, whatever, you know, take this idea and go with it. You know, I mean, so again, if a Democrat chair and a Democrat group would want to do the same thing, this is a way of holding people accountable, whether they're Republicans, whether they're Democrats. This is the way a republic should function.
So what are some other ways that you think that people can start holding their representatives accountable and trying to get to more of this transparency? Are there other ways that these groups can go about it besides just inviting them out to something?
Well, other ways, again, would be, again, to push for, you know, you always have a record of how people vote, but there's not too many places where they actually just – well, you can find the records, again, for how people vote, but it would be nice if there were more organizations that would just put up how people vote on every issue. Does that make sense? That's easy to access. I think that would be a good start. And again, without commentary, just put them up. You know, a lot of people will do this and then they'll say, but they won't explain, you know, they'll explain, well, this meant this. Well, let people read what it means.
So kind of a table.
That's it.
That would just show straight across who was voting yes or no on.
And again, and not just like some special interest group where they said, well, they voted bad on these and good on these. No, let me see what the bill said, yeah. You know, and just put it out. And again, those aren't secret, but they're also not necessarily super easy for a lot of people to find. But I think there, you know, if there would be, there could be public interest groups that just keep track of that and put all the bills, not just the bills that are important to them, but just all the bills, how people vote on them and what they propose and things of that nature.
Yeah, I'm surprised that's not something that's already done.
And again, it exists, but it's difficult to find. I mean, I can find ones. I think when they every year when the state legislature, everybody, when they put their bills that may be proposed, it may not make it even, I always read through them, but you're talking about, you know, 1,500 or more. Very few people will take that time. I'll read them, but it would be nice if there were organizations that would get together that would literally post those and then maybe have a search engine where you could post it via the particular legislator you're looking at or the particular bill and see how people voted. That would be nice. You know, that's, of course, people have more technical skill than I do. But there are a lot of people. It doesn't take much. Most 5-year-olds have more technical skill than I do.
Yeah, and that's kind of a struggle for a lot of people in general right now, is that we have so much access to information at the tip of our fingers.
Yes.
Just with these phones. But it's trying to figure out what's the unbiased information.
And again, this gets us to what people always ask, what can I do? What can I do? Everybody has a gift. You know, they always think, well, I can never run, you know, for office, or I can never do this. Okay, maybe so. But maybe somebody, you know, who's not necessarily, you know, who doesn't engage people that much, but maybe they're good with technology, typing stuff in. This is a skill that they could volunteer to do. Do you see what I'm saying? There's always something that people could do. You know, somebody may say, well, I'm disabled. I don't even get out. But this is something that somebody like that could do. They could type in that information and stuff. So always just look for, you know, a way to make things more transparent. You don't have to run for office. I mean, if you can and you're able to, do it. But if not, you know, there's always something that people could do. And again, this is something I can't do, but there's other things that I can do, you know. But that's another way that we can make things more transparent.
Kind of about just finding your niche.
That's it. Everybody has a niche. Everybody does.
Just kind of do your job. I know that's something that it's talked about in sports a lot, you know, especially like a football team. You can have a really good quarterback or a really good running back, but if your line's not blocking, or if you know somebody's running a play
that's
wrong,
it.
You know, that can blow the whole thing up. So it's all about that teamwork. Now, let's shift gears a little bit and talk a little bit about the refugees at the border down in Mexico, and kind of get some of your thoughts about that and how that's been handled. I know that we've seen tear gas. We've seen several different methods that are really reminiscent of the way that the protesters at Standing Rock were treated. And how do you kind of get to that point to what's ethical and what's not?
Yeah, I mean, well, obviously, you know, you still have to have a secure border. I mean, you know, and so, you know, if people rush the border, you have to stop them. You don't want to shoot them, obviously, but so tear gas may be the next thing that you may have to do, you know, something like that. But for the people who really are interested in getting asylum, who really have an asylum claim, and I imagine if there's thousands of people there, there are some who really probably do have a claim for safety or whatever, you know, for political reasons. But for those people, what they should do, the proper channel would be, since they've made it to Tijuana, you know, the U.S. has a consulate in Tijuana. That's where they could apply for asylum right there. They don't even have to rush the border to do that. And, you know, that's the proper channels to do that through. You know, just rushing a border doesn't mean you get asylum. I think we've propagated an idea that if you can just get across, you're safe. But you know, that's not necessarily the case. And you know, while we talk about this, there are people who actually need asylum right now, who we ignore. For example, you can look at Christians being persecuted in Syria right now under the Islam, you know, in areas still controlled by the Islamic State. That's on the one hand. There's also, you have a Muslim minority in China who are being persecuted heavily. You've got a million of them in internment camps and stuff. And some of these have actually made it to the U.S., and we never hear about those people. I mean, so there are people who have legitimate asylum cases, but if we say, well, we're just looking for better opportunities economically, whatever, well, the fact is, you know, the U.S. has it better than 99% of people, but you're not going to allow that other 99% of the world's population to come into the U.S. We can't absorb that many. I mean, yes, as a good Samaritan, people who truly have issues of you know, who are facing issues like genocide, yes, I mean, you know, there's things we should do. But you can't just say just to improve somebody's, you know, lifestyle, because again, that would require bringing millions and millions in, and again, that would lower the standard of living in the U.S. itself. I mean, you know, for us to handle our own problems and everything. So we have to first define what asylum, you know, what constitutes, you know, who really needs asylum.
So where do you draw that line? Where is I mean, how do you figure out what constitutes somebody that's really in danger, or what are the guidelines that they would go by? Is that up to a committee? Is that up to one person?
We have judges that can hear these cases. You know, obviously, again, if people are truly facing genocide, I mean, that's a no-brainer, and they've made it here. I mean, you know, that we've done for years. But remember, when we talk about economic want or enough, something like that, that's not necessarily a reason. That's not, you know, an adequate reason necessarily. You have to look for really matters of life and death, and matters of pressing life and death. That would be, you know, one of the main things for asylum. Because again, we can look back to where we failed on this. If you look, in before World War II, if we're turning back Jews and things of that nature, you know, we have failed at times. So we shouldn't say no such thing as asylum, but we have to determine, is this really a matter of life and death? Is there no other option? And for most people, there is another option. Does that make sense? We are not in the ability of helping everybody fix every problem, but, you know, we are in the ability of helping people who really, truly probably face genocide and can make it here.
Yeah, I can see where you're going with that. I guess it's just tough to watch it go on, you know, from a human side of it. Just to kind of see the way that people are being treated, because it really, you know, the whole thing from whenever they started taking kids away at the border, to whenever you start seeing the tear gas and all this kind of stuff, it really is reminiscent of a lot of the stuff that the minorities of this country have gone through, whether it was, you know, trying to vote or, you know, marching in Alabama back in the 60s, or whether it was, like I said, like Standing Rock, or, you know, we've seen so many of these incidents that it really does give you that kind of same feeling.
But again, by the same token, if you have 15 million, that's not how many is there, but if we look at how many people we have here illegally, if you look at the numbers we have, if they're competing for jobs, that tends to hurt the people who have been on the bottom, who have been on the bottom for so long. In other words, when you have if you have 10, 15 million people who come up, you know, who are looking, who really are in need that, you know, that badly, that's going to compete with people on the bottom who are actually looking for jobs, you know, the Americans. That's not going to impact a upper middle class white person. Does that make sense? But it's going to impact the people who have traditionally faced, you know, problems, whether we're talking about people in the inner cities, whether we're talking about somebody, you know, in the rural areas who are looking for, you know, for work. Those numbers compete against those people. I mean, you know, we always talk about the let the market decide. And the thing is, if you keep bringing in more just cheap labor, that means that people who literally are manual workers can never move up. They can never move up. Their services are not going to be as valued if you just keep bringing stuff in. So immigration, mass immigration, we're not saying no immigration, but mass immigration tends to hold the people who are on the bottom at the bottom. Again, on the, this is one of the considerations we have to look at.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot that goes into that. I mean, it's kind of an old idea, the rich get richer and the poor stay poor.
I mean, because if you look who favors large immigration, on the one hand, you know, we can say, well, the Democrats do because they want the votes. But on the other hand, you know, you got a lot of wealthy Republicans that like that cheap labor coming up. It means they don't have to pay American workers as much. I mean, you can always have people, if you have more people competing for those manual jobs, you can keep paying them less and less and less. And so this is, you know, the issue of immigration is one that cuts across party lines both ways.
And that's one of those that you talked about before that that might be one of those issues that they don't want to solve.
That's right. That's right. I mean, you know, we'll talk about like poor people coming across, but we also have our own poor. You know, it's funny because I'll run in circles a lot, and they'll have this stuff about, you know, I know people that like, you know, they'll travel the world and all the stuff, and they want to see the traditional culture somewhere. And it's funny because they think everybody else's, quote, peasants are quaint, but for the American poor, keep them at arm's distance. Yeah. That's wrong. That's wrong. I mean, you know, if you don't love your neighbor, then what are you? I mean, you know, that's one of the first two commandments. Love your. I mean, you got to take care of poor people here too. Now, again, this doesn't mean that we don't have an obligation elsewhere under any circumstances. Like I said, if there's genocide going on, something like that, yes, you know, there are things we can do. But first, we have to take care of our own as well. And you know, we live here in Chickasha, and the poverty here is unbelievable.
I think a lot of these, you know, more rural towns that aren't closer to the bigger cities, you start getting more of kind of, it's more about who you know than what you know.
That's it, yeah.
Because you're running in smaller circles, and it is hard to get ahead. You know, it's hard to make up that difference. Now, there is a big difference between the amount that, like, say, a CEO of a company is making compared to what they were making, you know, maybe in the 70s
That's
or
right.
60s or something. But there's not nearly as big of a difference between, you know, minimum wage.
That's or right. That's right. Well, you look in this town. If you look at this town, you know, once upon a time, we had the factories here. Mm-hmm. And if you look at how much workers made in this town in the 1980s, they made more then than they do now. And I'm not even talking about figured for inflation. I'm talking about straight money.
Straight across, yeah.
And that's what gets me. And, you know, the same thing. If we look in this town, you have all these people worried about, like, well, you know, they don't have there's paint peeling from their house. We ought to fine them. They ought to have more pride in their community or whatever. Yeah. And I'm thinking, first of all, if these people are making, you know, $700 a month, and that's what they're living on, they don't have enough to paint their house. Lay off of them.
Yeah.
You know, we need to worry about real things, things like that.
And there's people that are worried about just getting a gallon of gas to mow their grass.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
I mean, because they don't want that farm.
Or somebody will say something about, well, their grass is too high. Well, maybe their lawnmower is dead and they're saving to buy it up. Or maybe they're working 80 hours a week and they just haven't got to it yet. I understand. I get it if it's a health hazard. I mean, you know, if the grass is knee high and there's snakes and rats living in there, sure, you got to find them. But if it's just a matter of how it looks, get over it. I mean, because nobody wants their house to look bad. I mean, nobody wants that. And usually if it is, it's a matter of they don't have the ability to fix it. Now, again, I get it if it's a health hazard. I understand that. You've got to do things about that. You know, if there's standing water and there's mosquitoes and all that, I get that. I get that. But if it's just a matter of appearance, you know, that's just the way it is.
Now, getting back to what we were talking about, that disparity, that difference between the CEOs and the regular workers, how do you narrow that gap? Is there some kind of way that you can regulate that, like a you can't make more than so many percent of what your lowest employee makes, or
I'll give you an example. This is just an example at a federal level, okay? And this kind of fits in with this. I want to talk about Social Security for a second. And again, I have a view that's kind of different from most Republicans and most Democrats, but let's take Social Security for example, okay? Now, we can talk about whether Social Security is good or not, but here's the point. That was an argument to have in the 1930s. The fact is, everybody's hooked on it now. We have to. I mean, does that make sense?
We're stuck.
That's it. You're stuck, whether you like it or not, and we can talk about other ways to reform it, but that's a question that involves a 40 or 50-year period of time. But if we're talking about right now, okay, you look at the way Social Security operates right now. It's paid by two groups. First of all, the employer pays half, and then you pay half. Okay. Well, here's the thing. There's also a cap on Social Security. And what that means is after you make about, don't hold me to this, I'm very close to the right amount. I'm close. I think it's about $120,000 a year. Somebody can look this up, you know, and they'll see I'm close. I'm within $5,000, okay? But around $120,000 a year, you don't pay extra Social Security. So let's say, let me think of somebody that makes $120,000. It's a lot more than what I make. Okay, but nevertheless, but it's not outrageous. You know, we live in a lower income place, so I don't have to make as much as a lot of people. But but you figure a lot of trauma nurses that work in trauma centers in cities, let's say like in Chicago or something, they probably make $120,000 a year. What that means is that Bill Gates pays literally the exact same amount that nurse pays. I don't mean percentage. I'm talking about the actual dollar amount.
Yeah.
You see, because once you make over $120,000, you don't pay any Social Security. Now, here's the thing. Wouldn't it be better if we lifted the cap and just say, we're not asking the wealthy to pay any more than anybody else does. But if it's 7%, let them pay their 7%.
Yeah.
Okay, if you lifted the cap, you could do two things. First of all, you could lower the rate on everybody. You get that rate down. That's number one. Number two, you could take the amount off of business. Okay? And then what that would do is, let's get back to the CEO example. Then you got this CEO who makes, I don't know if they make a billion. I'm just saying this. Okay, but let's say somebody makes $1 billion. Well, then now they're going to have to pay that Social Security, which is going to help maintain that. But also, they could think, well, I don't want to pay all my money. Well, what can they do? Well, instead of taking that big income, they could reinvest it in their business, which again, no longer pays Social Security. And that would actually help, you know, spur their business and create jobs. It would give people an incentive to actually invest instead of just conspicuous consumption.
But that'll never happen because everybody in the legislative is going to be affected by that.
Yeah, but there are ways around this. I mean, there are things that can be done. But I think that would be better than, say, let's mandate how much a CEO can get. Does that make sense? There ought to be just – and the other thing is we need a sense of – you know, people ought to just have a personal sense of responsibility. You know, people need to be able to regulate themselves. You know, this notion of look at what I got, look at my bling bling, whatever. I mean, that shouldn't be what people are noted for.
The keeping up with the Joneses.
That's it. It shouldn't be what we have, but, you know, how we behave. That should be the model. And again, you'll notice this rampant materialism is not just a rich people problem. This runs straight through society. I mean, if you get to an inner city, again, it's what type of tennis shoes do you have? In other words, it doesn't matter whether somebody's rich or poor. We tend to be obsessed with the wrong things.
Well, there's a phrase in hip hop that describes exactly what you're talking about, and it's fake it till you make it.
That's it.
And so you see all these people that just get so far behind because they want the bigger house, they want the nicer car, they want, I don't know, plastic surgery or whatever, and they end up getting so far behind. And, you know, we see it a lot, and I see it a lot in the oil field workers.
Yes.
People that make a lot of money at one time, and I don't think they understand how up and down the oil business is.
That's
because
it.
I had a lot of cousins that worked in the oil boom in the 80s.
And you're right. You know? And to their defense, again, this is, I get it, is what happens. They work very hard. And then when they get that paycheck, they just want to play. I mean, that's natural. I do the same thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But then what happens is they go out and blow it. And then when the money's no longer there, not only have they blown the money, but they've also maybe bought a bigger house, a bigger car, and now stuck with those bigger payments. Mm-hmm. So again, it's a matter of self-restraint. But again, in their defense, I'm not going to put down oil workers. I've done the same thing. You know, when I've had jobs that are just real long, and I get that paycheck, I'm thinking, I want to go play.
But
you're right.
It was just one of those
But again,
you work 2 weeks on and then have a week
and,
off.
And you're
whatever,
tired, yeah. And, but again, it's something that people ought to just have. You know, fathers need to have, you know, conversations with their sons. You know, grandparents need to have conversations with the grandchildren saying, look, you're getting this money, but you got to have a little self-restraint.
Well, that's a whole another couple of issues right there is just first off, fathers being involved.
That's it, yeah.
And second off, having a conversation.
That's it.
People don't sit down and talk anymore. I mean, everything. Oh yeah, and the computers are one of the things.
Yes, and it's a nightmare.
Yeah, so I guess that's the main thing is just communication. That's what we need to get back to. And I mean, you can't fix a problem if you don't talk about what the problem is, identify it.
And we were talking about what we could do. You know what we could do, and you know this. You have children too,
yeah.
And you know this too. You know, we get home and it's like, oh, just let me set. And I guess the thing that we can always do is when the kids come up, take that time, even if you don't feel like it.
Yeah,
just take that time, and that's something we could always ask our listeners to do. Pay attention to your kids. You know, just pay attention to the kids, talk to them, even if you don't feel like, because we never feel like it, we're always tired, and we yeah. never have the energy they do, because they have all that energy, those kids do, but we just have to, like you said, what was it, fake it till we make it,
it till you make it.
It's true.
All right, well, thank you, Dr. Crowe, it's been a blast, and we'll be back next week.